From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, right behind national security and the economy in this election season is an issue Americans know intimately and too often regard with fear. It's health care, and often these days it is paired with the word crisis. One in six Americans is uninsured. Health insurance premiums are skyrocketing, up by double digits. 14% of Americans say health care is the most important problem facing the country, and they want a potent prescription to get their bills down or just to get coverage at all. George Bush and John Kerry have plans, charges, and countercharges. Tonight, we'll look at all of them. Up next on Point, Kerry versus Bush on health care and the choice facing voters on November 2nd. Do you have a clear idea of where the candidates stand on health care? How high a priority is health care for you? Are you struggling to pay your premiums, or are you one of the 45 million Americans without health insurance? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now in the studio is Robert Blendon, professor of health policy and management at the Harvard School of Public Health. Robert Blendon, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
A real pleasure.
Also with us tonight from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, and hello to our guest.
Robert Blendon, you're in the School of Public Health. You also pay close attention to how Americans are thinking about health care, and we know it comes with a lot of trepidation these days. When you look out across this country, what are the top concerns people have about health care? We think we know what they are. They want to have it. They don't want to pay too much for it. Have we got that right?
Well, with the Kaiser Family Foundation, we've been interviewing thousands of Americans around the election time, listening to them talk about the health care issue. And in this election, it is the fourth biggest issue when people think about what's important in their vote.
And we're talking about big issues.
And big issues. So it's just behind the economy, Iraq, and terrorism. It way exceeds other issues that we might have talked about in other elections, Social Security, education, crime, the environment. So it's really big in this issue.
And presumably we've got it right. It's because, A, people fear at some point they might be left naked without health insurance and coverage, or that they just can't afford to keep up with these premiums.
Well, we have it, but actually when you talk to people, they mention three different problems, and different groups in the country are more worried about one or the other.
Okay.
They're all pocketbook issues, so we're right there. But for 24% of voters, it's the high cost of health care that really bothers them. They don't necessarily think about the uninsured issue, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Even though 45 million of their countrymen and women are without, until you lose it, you've got it.
Yeah. And they're thinking about the huge premium increases, mm-hmm. the cutback in benefits. Mm-hmm. It isn't that they're not aware of it a problem, but when you talk to them, it's their insurance premiums. It's the fact that drug prices have gone up.
Got it.
The second group tend to be older American seniors who are very worried about Medicare and the new prescription drug benefit. And when they talk to you, it's very much around Medicare, the problems with the new benefit.
Because of the complexity with it.
And it doesn't cover enough. Mm-hmm. And they're afraid that Medicare could run out of money and leave them stuck. And then the third group are concerned about the uninsured. And there are people who worry more about it. You see, Democratic voters tend to worry about it more than Republicans. Middle-income people tend to worry about costs. So there is a difference. But what's driving this issue, and you hit every one of them, but let's see if we can sort of make it concrete, because then we're going to look at what the candidates are doing.
Yeah.
If you have employment-based insurance, it's gone up the premiums 50% in the last 4 years.
Ouch, that is big.
And the drug prices have been the fastest, and drug expenditures, the fastest thing in employer insurance. So
these vastly ahead of inflation.
So, and it turns out that's five times more than people's incomes and wages at work went up.
Okay, so we want to compare tonight how these two candidates would address this. Just give us the top line first. What are the values, the priorities that Kerry brings, that Bush brings to addressing health care in the U.S.?
Well, let's deal with Senator Kerry because he's the challenger here. Senator Kerry wants the federal government to spend substantially more money in the years ahead to do two things. One, to subsidize insurance so the 45 million can afford to buy a policy.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, he wants to help people with huge medical bills, $50,000 and up, and their employers pay them in some sort of a large fund, the way we have flood insurance in Massachusetts.
So-called catastrophic health costs.
Right.
So he'd say the federal government will pick up a big chunk of catastrophic costs so that your premiums can go down, your insurance payment will go down.
To get rid of the problem of a lot of small businesses that a woman will have breast cancer or someone will have AIDS, and suddenly they can't afford the insurance because one or two cases drive them out.
It's croaking the business to cover
and
those.
So that is sort of the second value. The third value, and let's just get back to the Medicare issue, because the president and Senator Kerry disagree. The Senator Kerry basically feels that the Medicare bill that was just enacted has to be fixed. And when you turn to the president considers the recent Medicare bill, which is the largest enactment in addition to Medicare in its history,
mm-hmm.
enormous achievement, something to be proud and not to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
So Kerry sees flaws in this. Now, he's not alone, because when you interview seniors at the moment, by 2-1, and this is sort of a surprise that we found, seniors have an unfavorable impression of the new bill. They're worried about the benefits.
And we know that. We hear that. But bottom line, John Kerry wants to spend, and of course the number's disputed, but he says, what, $650 billion over 10 years. This is by erasing that tax cut on households with $200,000 incomes plus. And with that, he would insure, by, again, his number, another $27 million out of that $45 million.
And he also would pay a lot of the bills for people who have huge bills.
Which would bring premiums down, which would help both individuals and the businesses.
Right.
Now, George Bush's main focus, his value?
And that's where you have to really understand the values here. He feels that we have to only increase our current spending by a modest amount. We have a deficit here, the future tax issues. So his coverage of the uninsured, and the estimates range anywhere from 4 to 11 million, about how his plans would work.
I mean, the 45 million uninsured, but he would bring new coverage to 4 to 11 million of those.
Absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. So maybe anywhere from sort of a very small fraction to a quarter or a third of what Kerry would.
But the issue everybody sort of has to understand, what has made this a really underlying political issue, is that number increased 5 million over the last 4 years. So it's
Five million more people, up to 45 million under George Bush.
Right.
But we've clearly got an underlying problem here if there are already 40 million. But George Bush wants to privatize this. This is part of his ownership society. Is everyone going to be on their own hook here, responsible for their own health care?
Well,
he wants a savings account?
Let's see what he gets. I think he's it's much more limited, but let's deal with the private insurance. Senator Kerry, most of his plan relies on people purchasing private insurance that don't have it, but he thinks the government has to basically play some sort of an umpire regulator here for people to get a decent group policy. The president has a fundamentally different view. The president believes that we have to unleash competition between private health insurance plans, that we don't have enough regulation, that we need more, we need a lot less. So his proposals are to free up regulation so people can get in the small group plans, they can come together, they can sell policies that are different. And then he has a very fundamental issue about the future of the country, which he calls an individual responsibility society. In healthcare, what that's come to mean is encouraging people to buy health insurance plans where there is a high deductible, often $2,000 per family per year.
Okay.
But there is a tax feature that puts some money in an account that could be used in that $2,000.
So if I'm rich or poor, either way?
There is encouragement. The problem is we're not yet clear if I'm a low-wage worker at a gas station, whether or not my employer is going to contribute to that account, because the president isn't contributing.
And let me ask you this. Yeah. With the cost of health care so high, whether I'm rich or middle class or poor, can anybody save enough money at any point? Can you imagine to actually, I'm going to have a heart surgery. I'll pay for that. I've got a savings account, a special treated account.
Your employer that will save money. If I have an insurance plan at Harvard and now I have a $2,000 deductible, Harvard saves money. But best case, Harvard would put the money in an account and it would be there for me. But if I didn't use it every year, I could save it. And that's the principle. But the principle is that my employer will put money in. They may or may not choose to do that.
Also, the principle or the assumption is you've got some money to save.
Either your employer puts it in
or
you put it in and you have money. But the principle the president feels very strongly about is that you should shop around for more cost-effective medical care, not your insurer, not your doctor, not the government.
I'm going to be better informed about what policy to buy.
And so that's the core value where the
is
president
is. Is that reasonable?
Feels very,
can I know enough?
Very strong. Well, this is a very big dispute, but this is often gets lost in technical issues. It's a fundamental issue. Many people in the business community who and the president's advisors who advocate this are convinced that individuals could do so much better in finding bargains, fighting with doctors, fighting with a pharmacist to get a better price if they were asked to pay more of the bills. At the other side, and Senator Kaye would argue that people who are sick are not in position, they can't do this, this is very, very hard. Your insurer and the government should be the one duking it out with doctors, hospitals, and pharmaceuticals, not you. Hmm. But this is the fundamental value difference about the future direction. Who is dealing with the cost issue directly, your insurer or you, through your calls and shopping around?
That old ownership society back again. We are going to hear from advocates on both sides of this divide. But, Jack Beattie, I want to get you in here first. Big issue, enormous costs, economic costs and cost, of course, to individual households and two very different ways of approaching it between these candidates.
Yes, and, you know, we have a strange event. Paul Krugman, the economics columnist of the New York Times, and the Bush administration agree that the cost of health care has cost jobs in this recovery, that one of the reasons we're not producing jobs as we had in the past at this point in a recovery is because of the mounting cost of health care. As the professor said, up over 40% just in the last 3 or 4 years, $1.4 trillion a year, and that works out to about $4,800 per capita here. Canada, $2,700 per capita. France, $2,500 per capita.
So big, big money and growing fast.
Yes, but of course in Canada and in France, greater life expectancy, less infant mortality. And of course some people looking at all this say, wait a minute, unless we can somehow arrest the spiral, we're going to be working for health care. The wages are just going to disappear into health care premiums. And of course, the main money saver people come up with, if we didn't have the ideological problems, is a single payer. Medicare for all. That's, of course, what Canada has and what France has.
And
that's
something like what Bill Clinton proposed unsuccessfully a decade ago. More.
Yes, but he wanted to work much more through the private sector. But he did have a basic idea of competition within a budget. But neither of these candidates, so far as I can see, Kerry objects, he says he does. But neither one, so far as I can see, really does anything serious about stopping the cost of health care. Kerry shifts it. He doesn't stop the cost. He shifts it from the private insurer onto the federal government, but that still is a total adds to the total cost of health care.
Robert Blendon, how about it? Are both of these plans Band-Aids if you look at the cost spiral itself?
I think both these plans would help millions of Americans with some of their costs and expenditure problems. It's not going to slow down this 50% increase every 5 years. It'll just help some people pay the bills. At the same time, I think both candidates would want to be here and say, hey, we're not for a Clinton plan. We're not for Canada. We are both Senator Kerry and the president. We're for incremental changes that'll make a difference here, but nothing that large scale. So I think both of them will help millions of Americans, but it won't solve the broad problem, but it may make a lot of people easier who have large medical bills or don't have insurance and can't buy it. They'll have a policy for some working people. They'll, as one person said to me, some policy is better than no policy.
So a choice to be made here. We'll come back and get into it with advocates of the Bush way, the Kerry way. We're talking about the two big contenders on health care tonight, the candidates' plans, what they would do, what their plans would cost. You can join the conversation. Do you have a clear idea of where the candidates stand on health care? How important is this issue this year to you? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking tonight about Kerry versus Bush on health care, the candidates' plans, what they would do, and what they would cost. You can join the conversation tonight. Are you one of the 45 million Americans without health insurance? Are you struggling to pay your insurance premiums? And what strikes you as more likely to be effective? Kerry having the government backstop the cost of catastrophic care. Bush encouraging personal savings to cover health care costs. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. This is a big issue and a sensitive one. The candidates have been running ads on it. We're going to talk to representatives of each camp tonight, but first let's hear their ads. First, here's a John Kerry ad on health care.
The Bush health care record. Health insurance cost up 64%. Medicare premiums up by 56%. The Bush health care plan. Raise insurance premiums for 4 out of 5 small businesses. Over 1 million more Americans would lose their health insurance coverage. John Kerry, a plan to make health care available and affordable and cut the costs for small businesses. John Kerry, a new direction on health care.
I'm John Kerry, and I approve this message.
So cost, cost, cost. Kerry says Bush has driven it up, and he would drive it up further. Here's the George Bush ad.
On health care, President Bush and our leaders in Congress have a practical plan. Allow small businesses to join together to get lower insurance rates big companies get. Stop frivolous lawsuits against doctors. Health coverage you can take with you. The liberals in Congress and Kerry's plan. Washington bureaucrats in control. A government-run health care plan. $1.5 trillion price tag. Big government in charge. Not you, not your doctor.
There's the Bush ad, and this is all about big government, liberals, bureaucrats. The whole closet is unfolded. George Bush, of course, recently, I think it was in Minnesota, calling John Kerry's plan a government takeover. We'll see what the John Kerry camp has to say about that. We're joined tonight by Robert Blendon. He's professor of health policy and management at the Harvard School of Public Health. And now, from Great Neck, New York, Dr. John Cohen. He is an advisor to the John Kerry presidential campaign. He's chief medical officer at the North Shore Long Island Health System. He's professor of surgery at Albert Einstein College of Medicine. Dr. John Cohen, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks very much, Tom.
And with us from Washington, Dr. Rex Cowdery, a physician and unofficial health care advisor to the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign. Until August of 2004 this year, he was associate director at the White House National Economic Council. He has formerly served as acting director of the National Institute of Mental Health. Dr. Rex Cowdery, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Tom, it's a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
Rex Cowdery, first to you. George Bush has recently described John Kerry's plan as a government takeover of the American healthcare system. Do you think that's accurate?
Absolutely. Takeover may be a bit of an exaggeration, but the notion that it gives more power to government to control critical aspects is unquestioned. When you look at where the newly insured individuals come from, 86% of them, at least according to the Lewin estimate, come from an expansion of Medicaid and SCHIP. And that is a government program. That is a government expansion. Similarly, the Congressional Health Plan. The government is going to be fundamentally involved in determining what the rules of that are and what the required coverage and the reinsurance program. Who's going to decide what programs qualify for this federal reinsurance, quite apart from the question of whether it's a good idea in the first place.
So you say it could be a touch of exaggeration, but you say the government's there. But then let me ask you this before I go to John Cohen. By everybody's numbers, Kerry's plan would bring a lot more uninsured Americans into an insured status. Is it worth it? Is it worth this approach in order to bring a lot more of those 45 million uncovered Americans out of the cold?
I think what's missing from the introduction is a sense of what the long-term strategy here is, and the visions are very different. We also have a goal to bring affordable health care to all Americans, but the point that you made about health care costs spiraling, and it's absurd to hold the president responsible for that. It's a combination of technology and our desires for new treatments and bad incentives.
It's gone on for a long time, but it has not stopped in Bush 1, in the first 4 years of Bush.
But see, I hope we'll get a chance to talk some about the kind of groundwork that we've laid for helping to bring this kind of escalation of healthcare costs under control that I think actually our strategy does. And that's a precursor to pouring money into a system. If we do it now, it's a waste of money, I think, except to deal with those most in need. What we need to do is lay the groundwork for actually doing something about these escalating costs by involving patients much more actively in decisions.
So you're saying haven't seen it yet, but there's groundwork being laid here. Let me turn to Dr. John Cohen, advisor to the Kerry Campaign on Healthcare. Dr. Cohen, you've got a bigger number that would be covered. You've also got a much bigger price tag. How do you sell the Kerry healthcare prescription, and can the country afford it?
Well, thanks, Tom. There is a fundamental difference between these two plans, and as you mentioned earlier, under Bush's watch, there are 5 million more people who are uninsured, 2.2 million women, 1.4 million African Americans, and 400,000 Hispanics.
Still, it's 5 million on top of 40 million already, so it's not as though the problem wasn't sitting
there. The issue of being, Republicans always accusing us of a big governmental plan. The fact is that the federal employee benefit plan, which is the congressional plan, which is what every member of Congress and the president currently has that you and I and everyone pay for, is a great plan. It's the least restrictive plan, has the widest choice of specialists, and it's the fairest to the doctors. And it's a privately managed plan. And what we're planning to do is open up another pool from the congressional plan so that people in small businesses and people between the age of 55 and 64 and people who are between jobs actually have access to an affordable health plan. I mean, the big issue here is affordable health plan and decreasing costs.
So you're saying it's not really government intervention. It's no more than an HMO. It's what congressmen have, and wouldn't those uninsured Americans like to have that too?
Well, they don't have access to anything currently, and they need access to an affordable health plan because most of, as you probably know, the overwhelming majority of the uninsured are really in small businesses. There's a misconception that it's the poor. It's actually not. It's people in the middle class, people in small businesses who have no access to affordable health care. And in terms of controlling costs, because costs are a big issue, and the Kerry Health Plan is very specific about controlling costs. As was mentioned earlier, they have a plan to decrease annual premiums by about $1,000 for every family. We have a real plan to make prescription drugs affordable by allowing safe importation of drugs, passing laws to pass on the rebates from the middlemen onto the people, and a change in the patent laws for generics, and really a chance for the states to negotiate better for the prescription drugs.
But what about Rex Cowdery's view here that the Bush way, though it may not ensure as many more people as quickly, it is, by shifting some responsibility and control to individuals, more likely over time to go at the fundamental issue of the cost spiral?
Well, you know, we're really talking about is health savings accounts, and there's really very little data, if any, to suggest that health savings account actually worked. In fact, if you look at the Commonwealth Fund, which just came out with a report, it says that not only is it not effective, but it actually may make the health of people worse. Because what happens is if you can possibly afford to put $5,000 in a year, which is a lot of money for a lot of people, into health savings
account,
then you have to decide whether you're going to spend the money. And the data actually suggests that if you're a diabetic or if your children need immunizations or if you need some checkups or if you need a mammogram, you actually may not use that money because you're saving it for more of a rainy day. So there's some suggestion now that your health care actually gets worse by a health savings account.
Rex Cowdery, talk to us about this health savings account, medical savings account. That's an unfamiliar concept to a lot of people. It may leave them wondering, does that mean I have to save to cover whatever comes my way? And we know how high medical bills can be. It sounds a bit overwhelming.
Absolutely. And when it's formulated that way, it sounds absurd.
So give it to us your way.
It is a combination of two things. First of all, a health savings account that belongs to the individual and that's portable between jobs, for example.
Okay.
Helps bridge between employer-sponsored insurance, combined with a high-deductible health plan. And that health plan will do the same things that health plans do now. They will negotiate lower prices with providers if you stay within network. You'll be able to take advantage of those. We know that those high deductible premiums are substantially lower than the kind of comprehensive premium. And indeed, if you look at it, if you actually go on the web and look at it for different levels of expenditure, it's quite remarkable. The total of out-of-pocket and what you pay in premiums is for most of the whole range of expenditures from $100 to $10,000 to $100,000 less expensive with this combination. And it's partially because it engages patients in attending to value, in paying attention to price as well as just what might make a difference.
Rex Cutter, I want to be sure I understand this. Then you're saying a high deductible policy so that, and the idea is then I would save some money so that when I had medical needs, I would pay the difference up to the deductible out of my savings, not the whole cost here, but that's where I would cover the deductible from, and I'm less likely to do some frivolous medical procedure because it will be out of my savings.
That's exactly the concept behind it, that one of the problems is that we have divorced people and to some extent divorced doctors as well from thinking about value. From thinking about what something costs in addition to just whether it might provide something additional. And we need to reconnect. We have huge variations in healthcare expenditures per Medicare beneficiary in different parts of the country that aren't explained by any kind of outcomes. I mean, there are estimates that as much as a third of our healthcare spending could be saved if we found a way to sort of focus people on choosing interventions of the highest value.
John Cohen, how about that approach? Is there some basic logic to it, or are you saying the logic itself doesn't work, or the Bush approach to getting that dynamic going isn't good?
Well, we're skirting one of the major issues, and the major issues being there's 45 million uninsured. I don't understand how the Bush approach is going to get us any further along than we were with the 5 million that have lost the last several years.
Well, it's supposed to bring back 7 million or 11 million or 4, depending on your number. Not as many as Kerry's plan, but some millions anyway.
Well, the data suggests that there will be at least a $10 billion savings by providing health insurance to the people who currently don't have it. So the controlling costs issue is really still an issue. You can't just ask a family who's making $50,000 a year to put $5,000 a year, which is what they're asking on a health savings account, and then have that gap where they still have to fill, we still have to pay for money before they reach the catastrophic coverage that the Bush people are suggesting. So, I don't see how you can ask people to put up that kind of money when the currently uninsured continue to rise, and it's now costing $10,000 for a family of four for health insurance per year.
John Cohen, Rex Cowdery, Robert Blinden, we've got a lot of callers who want to join this conversation. I want to begin to bring them in here. Gary is calling from Clark, New Jersey. Hi, Gary. You're on the air.
Hi. I just have this anecdote that I'd like to relay to you for your consideration.
Yes, please.
I had a little chemical burn a couple of weeks ago, and I went and sought out the service of a dermatologist. There were two of them. One was a young guy directly out of college. The other one was an older fellow. The younger fellow insisted on running me through the system, consultation, the whole, a very elaborate provision for this, for just taking a look at a little burn.
Okay.
And he wanted to charge me, literally, he even confided that it would be about twice what he would charge a healthcare provider.
You didn't have insurance, and so you were going to him straight,
right.
Direct?
I'm okay. Self-employed, and I have no health insurance.
Okay.
And he wanted to charge me twice to subsidize his other health-insured people. The second guy who was in his probably late 60s, said, looked at it, said, yeah, you're uninsured. He said, yeah. He handed me a sample, charged me $20, and sent me on my way. And he submitted to me that it's the idea of health insurance that's the problem.
What do you mean by that, Gary?
Well, he said something to the effect of like, well, the first thing, if you provide somebody a service, you say to them, well, what's your budget for my service? And they tell you. And then you say, well, that's what it's going to cost you.
So, Gary, what do you take away from this then? Are you leaning toward the Bush camp or Kerry here?
I don't know to believe in. I really don't know what to think.
Are you confident, comfortable going out and shopping for your own health care, as you've just done, or do you want to go to, an HMO and have them look at your problem and decide what you need?
Well, I'm luckily enough very healthy, and I don't mind paying some of my income for catastrophic health coverage that I'm hopefully never going to use to cover, the cost, to keep the costs down. But just that experience really left me very much frustrated with the way the system is laid out, that I can't participate in a normal fashion as a regular guy, as a consumer.
Got it. Gary, thanks for your call. It can be scary when you go out to get that treatment. Rex Cowdery, what do you hear in this story? On the one hand, Gary shopped, as you're suggesting.
Yep.
On the other, it didn't look like a very rational experience. The gap between the advice he's getting is so great.
Couldn't agree with you more. And that's one of the reasons that the president this spring focused on health information technology. We face a couple of different ways. We have a very fragmented system with wasteful spending. We have problems with lack of information. That's both information about the individual. I mean, when I went to see a specialist for an ankle problem, I had to carry my x-rays along with me. We don't have information about quality or outcomes or costs. I mean, what we'd like to move toward is both a rational situation where the information about the individual is available, but also where people have information in advance, where there's transparency, where there's information about outcomes with different kinds of approaches. And we're actually at a stage now where we can make a kind of market approach work better, provided we also find a way to help people who are low income and who can't buy in easily into it. And that's exactly where the tax credit program and some of the small business incentives that the president has proposed come in.
John Cohen, what do you make of our caller Gary's story? He's not insured. He gets a chemical burn. He goes out. He gets these two very different responses from doctors. And we can all imagine ourselves trying to shop this way. What do you hear there?
Well, I think, he's right. There's The first thing is it is difficult to shop, and there is not a lot of data available currently, especially on the quality side, for people to shop effectively. So anybody who's involved in healthcare, both Republicans and Democrats, agree that we need an electronic medical record. We need an electronic claim submission so that people can actually carry their medical record with them. We need an internet-based medical record. We need to cut costs and improve quality. Those we are all in agreement in. The question is how quick we're going to get there. But when Gary is shopping for healthcare, it turns out very difficult. Now, I don't know if you mentioned whether or not he has catastrophic coverage.
Which sounds like he might.
Well, I wasn't sure. It sounds like he was uninsured.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is there's a lot of young people like that who are currently uninsured. And that's okay until, one, all of a sudden they get into a car accident and they end up in an emergency room with a huge bill.
Sure.
Or, two, they unfortunately get some major diagnosis of cancer, which they never suspected, which happens to young people. So there's this perception that, well, maybe I'll get along. I'm a pretty healthy guy. I don't really need health insurance. But the fact is we need to make sure that everybody's covered and has access to affordable health care.
And you can be whacked in a hurry. Robert Blendon, you're listening patiently to these two men make the case for the two camps. What do you hear in this debate?
The big issue, and this is true of almost every journalist who has sort of buried themselves in these plans, it is a question of priorities. Senator Kerry wants to spend a lot more funds in the future to cover the $40 million. And the answer is, even though there are different kinds of plans, you can have a high deductible plan, you can have less benefits, the answer is the bulk of the people who are the $45 million can't pay their full premium. The president doesn't place the same spending priority on that. And he feels that tax cuts, which will help the economy, help the strength of American industry, is a higher priority. That turns out beneath the surface to be the biggest choice, because in either plan, you can have plans with larger deductibles, are smaller, that people
but
can
how,
buy
but
up.
How many of those $45 million
are actually going to be covered?
We'll come back and talk about that. We're looking at Kerry versus Bush on health care tonight. You can join the conversation. Do either of these plans get at the root problem? And business owners, employers, how is the spiraling cost of health care affecting you? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at Kerry versus Bush on health care tonight. You can join the conversation. Who do you trust to better take on the health care challenge, John Kerry or George Bush? Can we get health care for all and lower the cost? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined in the studio tonight by Robert Blendon of the Harvard School of Public Health, from Great Neck, New York, by Dr. John Cohen, advisor to the John Kerry presidential campaign, and from Washington by Dr. Rex Cowdery, a physician and unofficial health care advisor to the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign. He formerly served as acting director of the National Institute of Mental Health. Calling right now from Cambridge, Massachusetts, Jay is on the line. Hi, Jay.
Hi, I'm a practicing clinical cardiologist, and I wanted to point out a few things that none of the two good doctors here have been leveling with you. Which is the big picture in the healthcare system in the United States, that it is a spider's nest of very powerful competing special interest groups. And it doesn't take too long to understand that this cost shifting is basically a power play between these competing special interests. To give you an example, it's the pharmaceutical industry competing against the insurance industry, competing against the medical associations and the doctors, competing against the hospital industry, competing against every other player that has a special interest in the healthcare dollar.
You mean all to get a bigger piece of the pie? So when you listen to the debate over which way to go between these two plans, which strikes you as more effective in addressing that, or either?
Both of them skirt the important issue, which is that there is no clear way of funding this unless one deals with the special interests.
Oh, boy, you must be a cardiologist. Someone's having a heart attack just hearing you say that.
But the special interests are obviously intertwined with the political process.
And you're saying that they're milking the system, and they're going to do it under either the Kerry or Bush plan, continuing?
Well, milking the system, I think, is a simplistic term. But I would say that if you examine all these proposals, when you talk about cost-cutting and quality, it is the health insurance industry that is competing then against the doctors, because they are penalizing doctors and talking about reimbursement issues. And then there is the pharmaceutical industry that's working with brand name products that's competing against generics. And if you just look at the new Medicare drug discount bill, there was no provision for the government to negotiate.
Right, so no leverage there. Jay, I think we've got it, and I appreciate your call. You better get to that patient who's paging you. Jack Beatty, this goes to your issue of who really gets at cost. If there's cost shifting going around here, Rex Cowdery's saying that if you put more responsibility and power on the individual, ultimately that's going to throw a spanner in there and put a kind of brake on.
Well, that's the theory. There are two troubles with the administration's proposal. One, it isn't funded. 90% of the cost of the credit, which is $1,000 for individual, $3,000 for families, that they would give to poorer people to allow them to insure themselves, 90% of the cost of that is going to be paid through cuts in other programs. But the administration hasn't said what other programs. John Kerry funds his plan by rescinding the Bush tax cut for the top 2%. And second, Bush's the plan, $1,000 a year for individuals, $3,000 for families, that's the same offer he had in 2000. And yet, as we've just heard, costs of premium costs have gone up over 50% since then. And then the third thing, I mean, expert after expert that I've seen, at least, says that the Bush plan, tax credits for people who don't have insurance now, medical savings accounts for people who are insured, association health plans, that adverse selection stalks all of them, and that the effect of these plans could very well be weakening of the employer-based health system and a rise in premiums for everybody, because it's going to give all kinds of incentives for healthy people to opt out of the employer system and to take one another of these paths out. And that's going to create a vicious cycle within the employer-paid system where, because there are fewer people in the plan, premiums will rise. As more premiums rise, more people will go out, and on and on and on. Mm. And many people fear that this plan really could be much worse for people who are already insured than anything out there.
If the healthy and or the wealthy walk away, Rex Cowdery, what do you say to that concern?
Well, that was an interesting assessment of that. My response is the following, I think. First of all, it is in the budget. It has gone through that process of budget estimation as opposed to the senator's plan. The best estimation of the Kerry plan, if you throw out the Clinton-era expert estimate, and if you throw out on the other side the American Enterprise Institute estimate and go with the Lewin Group, which is bipartisan and independent, it's $1.25 trillion. And it's basically a shift of funds to the taxpayer. And the notion that that will be paid for by rolling back taxes only on people earning $200,000 or more is just fantasy.
So I'll ask John Cohen about that, but what about Jack's concern that the Bush plan takes the healthy out of the bigger pool of those to be insured and ends up weakening the sort of fundamental system that's keeping Americans covered?
Well, you know, there's a lot of theory about that. And when you look at the data, however, it looks like what separates out people who go for a high deductible and an HSA has more to do with the extent to which people want to control their expenditures. The evidence to date, it's limited, but the evidence to date, for example, from South Africa, where they have medical savings accounts that are very similar to the health savings accounts, and the emerging evidence is that these do not select adversely, that there are other factors that make these appealing to people, including people with chronic illnesses who want to have more control over who they see and how their illnesses are managed.
Our time's growing short, John Cohen. I want to get your response on those two fronts. First, on the cost, John Kerry says $650 billion and rescinding the tax cuts on the top 2% would cover it. Here, Rex Cowdery is saying another study, $1.2 trillion, and it can't be covered.
Well, you know, we could go back and forth about who you believe and who you don't believe in terms of that. I mean, he's citing the Congressional Budget Office, which even himself just said that 4 to 5 small businesses will increase their premiums if we go to association health plans, and premiums will go up 6% for all small businesses if we do association health plans, as the Bush administration is proposing. So, you know, we all agree that it is an issue of cost. The Kerry plan is very specific about how they're going to control costs. And they're very specific about covering the 45 million uninsured, because this really is about getting the costs down for most families, particularly middle class and small businesses, and getting more people covered. And you know, that's what the plan is about, and that's what John Kerry has put on the table.
And you feel confident that the rescinding the tax cut would cover it, or it may be more, but it's worth it because Americans need health coverage.
One, I'm absolutely confident it'll cover it. Two, we absolutely need the coverage for the American health plan. The plan is going to cover 95% of Americans, and just as important, the plan provides that every child in America will have health insurance.
Robert Blendon, does this debate put us at a real fork in the road, or have we not come to the real fork in the road yet?
I think there are some really fundamental differences here, but I think it's important to understand that in presidential elections, voters don't pick specific plans down to the details. They pick a direction that the candidate they're going to vote for takes. And there are differences here. Relying on private marketplaces, should government help people get group insurance or not?
You do a lot of surveying.
Yes.
Is this idea of more personal responsibility an appealing idea in your surveys?
It is to a number of people, but there's a lot of worry about by people who have standard insurance, that's not the way they want to go. But if they were here tonight, the way they would say is, well, if you don't force me, I don't care if the choice is available. But if you're telling me that I'm working at some gas station, I'm going to lose my current coverage, a lot of them would be concerned about the president's plan. I think they hear it as one option. But I think the real question is looking at the willingness to really spend a lot of money to subsidize people. And there's no question, John Kerry thinks government has to get involved with pharmaceutical companies and private insurance to make it work. The president thinks you want to reduce government and just encourage better competition between companies, consumers more information, not build up the federal oversight. That's a value choice a voter has to take. Do you think you need the government more involved or not?
Well, and that's no doubt a big piece of what it's going to come down to in many people's decisions. I want to thank all of our guests tonight, Dr. Rex Cowdery in Washington, Dr. John Cohen in Great Neck, New York, Robert Blendon here in the studio. Thank you so much to you all for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And Jack Beatty up in Hanover, New Hampshire, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
In a moment, a third hurricane threatens Florida. This is On Point. After weathering 3 devastating storms over the past several weeks, Floridians find themselves once again bracing for a hurricane, this one named Jean. The National Hurricane Center is predicting that Jean will hit Florida's eastern coast on Sunday or Monday, potentially as a Category 3 storm. The hurricane has already killed more than 1,000 people in Haiti. Jean is now barreling toward the Bahamas. Florida resident Jeff Klinkenberg is getting a little tired of preparing for hurricanes. In this radio diary, he wonders why Mother Nature is being so harsh on his state this year.
As we mop up after Hurricanes Francis and Charlie and Ivan, we Floridians contemplate Jean and worry about whatever terrible storm might spin off the African coast next. Is hurricane season a Darwinian trick intended to drive the weakest and least prepared among us to madness? Studying the dreaded Weather Channel map, we mentally connect the imaginary line from the latest cyclone to our state, to our town, to our recently flooded neighborhood. We picture glass shattering, oak trees falling, shingles flying. We buy new batteries and curse our lot. Even though the calendar says fall, we in Florida are still in summer mode. Summer is always our longest season, none longer than this one, when the tropics have been so in need of a double dose of Ritalin. Nature, will you please give us a break? During our longest season, I sometimes long for the days when we were less informed, when we had no space satellites watching Africa, and no round-the-clock weather station to tell us to start covering our windows and pray the rosary. That said, I am a Weather Channel junkie. By the end of this month, I often feel like I'm on a first-name basis with Dr. Steve Lyons, the bald-headed storm meister, and Jim Cantore, the macho guy in a ball cap who is always hollering, eyes shining, from some doomed seacoast or another. Steve, he shouts into the teeth of the tempest, this can only get worse. I love those guys. During the longest season, I hate them too. I hate hurricanes, but I know that's as silly as hating an alligator because it's a predator. Hurricanes are as natural as an alligator lurking in a pond, overcrowded with wading birds. The gator is just hungry, of course, but it will make the heron gene pool a little bit stronger by eliminating the weak and the foolish. So it is with a hurricane, roaring across the land and knocks down pines and oaks, palms and magnolias. Not all of them. The strongest will survive. It is the pines that have been weakened by bark beetles and the oak trees with unhealthy root systems that go down like matchsticks. For the most part, though, Natural Florida knows how to take a hurricane's punch. Natural Florida, after all, evolved to survive the occasional tropical cyclone. It is we humans who crumble like a washed-up prize fighter with a glass chin. The reason is hubris. We build what we probably shouldn't build, and we build inadequate structures. We build what turn out to be rickety homes on the ocean and along the bay, on the lake, and at the river. We get away with it just often enough to develop a false sense of security. Sometimes I think we Floridians are dumb, though perhaps it is our human nature to deny the reality of living in a hurricane-prone land. We don't prepare. We don't think the horror can happen to us. Along comes a Charlie, along comes Francis, along comes Ivan, doing their Darwinian thing. They punch holes through substandard walls or steel roofs improperly attached. They flood low-lying dwellings. Mobile homes that should have been retired decades ago end up crumpled in the trees. If we believe in Mr. Darwin's survival of the fittest hypotheses, we can hope the next generation of houses and mobile homes will be a little stronger. If we are lucky, the same will be true of all of us.
Jeff Klinkenberg is a columnist for the St. Petersburg Times. His new book is Seasons of a Real Florida. On Point is produced by Meghna Chakrabarty, Julie Jupp, Eileen Amata, Jane Manners, Chris O'Connor, John Roberts, James Ross, and Karen Schiffman, with help from Lauren Matalin. Our senior producer is Graham Griffith. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.